Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, it's the first show of 2025, and I'll be joined by the navigation coach, Tara Rafter, to find out how we can make sure we set the right course for ourselves for the year ahead and stay on it as best we can. I'll be joined by home organiser Jenny Douglas to talk about tackling the clutter in our homes to bring a little bit of peace. And I'll be bringing you a beautiful, inspiring health story from opera singer Shauna Clare. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, my sister and her family have headed back to America, so no more mini people in my everyday. Just my own beautiful kids who are now starting to tower over me, but that's all good. What a lovely time we had. I also took my own giant kids away for a few days to regroup, and it's actually been a lovely way to start the new year. Now, as I say every year, I don't believe in starting the new year with strict resolutions or any punishing diets. I ease myself into the whole thing. I mean, it's not easy to start a new year. We have no more fairy lights very soon, no more festive food, family numbers have been reduced, as has the bank balance. Why would we start metaphorically beating ourselves over the back? Now, my self-care start course kicks off tomorrow. 10 minutes a day for 10 days, focusing on your self-care and time just for you. If you think that's something you'd like to do to ease yourself into the new year, you can find out more at nourishyourself.ie or my Instagram at Claire McKenna Presents. You can always email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, as I said, the cupboards are bare, and once we take down the Christmas decos, it's going to be very barren about the place. But for many of us, a sort out of our home space often goes on the long finger. Well, maybe 2025 is the year to get more organised. And I'm joined in studio by Jenny Douglas from A Good Moment Company. Jenny, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So this is a new business for you. You set it up this year, but it was something that was rattling around in your mind for a long time.
Yeah, a long time. I've always been a highly organised person, even as a child growing up. And I've always wanted to have my own business. So kind of circumstances led in the last year or so for me to set this up. Yeah, and I'm delighted. It's going really well.
Okay. And I think people now, this is the start of the new year, they're like, oh God, you know, putting away the Christmas decorations was hard enough. But why should they perhaps consider reorganising their home?
Because it has so many benefits, and it's a lot of benefits that people actually don't realise as well. Like, obviously, you're taking away the visual clutter that you can see in your home, and along with it, maybe a bit of stress. But there is also so many other hidden benefits to it. When we have a lot of clutter in our homes and in our workspaces, we actually end up internalising that a lot, and therefore we're carrying around that kind of emotional and kind of physical clutter within our bodies as well. So it's great to release that. And it also saves you a huge amount of time as well. It's really surprising. IKEA did a study there recently that we spend 6.5 months of our lives looking just for misplaced items. So, you know, that sellotape, that pen, that set of keys that, you know, you don't know where you've put them down. And that's a huge amount of time that we shouldn't be wasting on little things like that. You know, those kind of things are while important, but it's more important to have that time back to spend with your family, to spend on your business, to spend just enjoying your life and having those good moments. So there's lots of those little hidden benefits that, you know, help you when you have an organised and a tidy home. And it's really uplifting and it's really empowering for you to kind of continue your life in that way.
And I used to think to have an organised home meant it had to be minimal. And, you know, there's a whole trend now to having like your spices and jars with labels. You don't really have to go
that far. We're not talking like Pinterest or Instagram friendly. It's whatever works for you in your own home, whatever your life is like, your family, how you function. It's just making it work for you and what's practical for you and what's easy for you to maintain going forward. So simple things like, you know, okay, everybody has a junk drawer, you know, but even organizing that little junk drawer can, you know, be really helpful for you. But it's also about setting yourself up to, you know, thanking your future self, as I would say. So maybe streamlining your morning. So creating a hallway that works for you. So you maybe you can have some benches, some baskets, some bins, some hooks, you know, and putting everything that you need in that space ready to go in the morning. So it saves you time and it saves you stress. So yeah, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to look amazing. It's whatever works for you and your family.
And you mentioned the word stress there, and there are jobs that kind of niggle at us and we push them down because we think we don't have time, but you're still sort of carrying that, aren't you? Every time you walk into that room or see it there, you think you're escaping it and ignoring it, but you're not.
You're not. And we all carry around that kind of low level of stress in our bodies, you know, and we, you know, as you say, we see things all the time. But actually, it doesn't have to be like that, whereby, you know, you don't have to do this massive declutter every time. You know, you take things small, you take them quite simple and easy. Like, instead of doing a whole room, maybe just focus on a corner of that room, you know, for 1 week, or even a drawer, you know, start small. So therefore you can feel motivated, you can see the actual benefits. And as I say, that will motivate you to keep going and keep doing it. And it's also really good to kind of schedule a kind of a check-in with yourself every once in a while. So you might say, okay, January, as you say, post-Christmas, we've all taken down the decorations. But maybe before you put them back in your attic or wherever you store them, just have a look at them again and kind of go, right, okay, there's certain things we didn't use here this Christmas. We didn't use that, they might be broken, you don't like them anymore, for whatever it is. Take them out now. Don't put them back in that box and have to deal with them again, you know, in 12 months' time or 11 months' time. Take them out now. Do a bit of an organisation. Put things the way you want to. So you're making it easy for yourself the next time you take those decorations down.
Yeah, I did a massive cull when we were decorating the house. I kind of separated the ones, as you say, that just don't suit anymore. The broken ones went to the bin. Why do they always stay in the box? And the ones that don't really match anymore, they all went into a box and went to the charity shop.
Yeah.
Why does it feel so good to have a clear out and go to the charity shop? I mean, it's literally like taking the weight
huge
off
weight.
Your shoulders.
Yeah, huge weight, it is. Because as I say, we carry that around with us and we don't need to. So, and a lot of people don't have time to do this as well. So when you have the ability to declutter and reorganize your home in whatever way that is and whatever way it works for you, if you've been putting that off for a very long time, it's going to be a huge weight lift off your shoulders. And it's really going to motivate you to keep going and doing that in all the different areas of your home or your workspace. But it is, we carry around, it is stress, it is physical stress that we, you know, that we allow ourselves to walk around when it doesn't have to be. So by starting small and doing little bits here and there, week on week, you know, we can hopefully reduce that stress, reduce that anxiety, that overwhelm that we carry around ourselves all the time.
So people are on board now. You've got them in. Are there particular areas in the home that you'd recommend focusing on first in January?
Yeah, in January, you really want to focus on the real high impact areas of your home, the ones that cause you the most stress. So there'd probably be four areas I would concentrate on. First is your wardrobe. Okay, we're in the middle of a season now, so we're not really changing that up. But there may be things that you changed over your wardrobe in October that you haven't worn since. So streamline them out. Take everything out that you're not wearing. Take out things that don't fit anymore, that you don't like anymore, that don't make you feel good. So once you streamline that warmer wardrobe, you're saving time in the mornings when you're getting dressed and you're actually enjoying the process of getting dressed as well. Another one would be that entryway, that hallway. So, you know, when you're leaving in the morning, you can pick up everything you need right at that door. So have everything there. Use all the different bins and hooks and everything I mentioned before. And you can get out the door a lot quicker in the mornings. And also when you're coming back in, that area is setting the tone for the rest of your house. You're not coming into a stressful situation straight off the bat. Another one would be your kitchen as well, because obviously we all spend a huge amount of time in our kitchen. So making sure that things are maybe categorized together, maybe having a little breakfast bar area, a tea and coffee area, even like lunch boxes for your children if you're doing that and prepping their meals. So kind of categorize things and make sure you're just using, or sorry, keeping what you're using in hand's reach, you know, and that's easy to see. And then finally, the fourth one I would do would be your living room, especially after Christmas now as well. There could be a few little decorations that you've missed that are behind a car and whatnot. Reset that. Have that as an area that is your little sanctuary that you can come home to in the evenings and you're not sitting down, you know, after a busy day, having your cup of tea, you know, a cup of coffee, whatever it may be, and you're not looking around and seeing all that clutter and seeing all that untidiness, which is making you more stressed. Not, you know, you can't relax then in that kind of surrounding.
So when you have done that declutter, how do you make sure that you sustain it throughout the year?
Yeah, like you really have to work on maintaining that. And there's certain things you can do to do that. There's kind of four tips that I would have. The first one I would do was having the one in, one out rule. So if you bring something new into your home, let go of something that you're not using at all. So you're not helping, you are helping yourself to prevent more clutter building up. Another one would be scheduling some decluttering times for yourself. So maybe once a month you decide, I'm going to do this room or that room. I'm going to go in, I'm going to take a corner or a drawer and make sure you go through that thoroughly and only keep the things that you want and need. It's about starting small and staying consistent. So, you know, those big decluttering sessions where you sit down and then an hour later you're feeling completely overwhelmed. There's clothes, there's pots, there's pans, whatever room you're in, that's all around you, and actually you're completely demotivated and you find it really, really stressful. So start small and make sure you continue in that way. And then by setting up little systems that help you, like having bins, having baskets, having drawer organizers, using labels, all those kind of things make it easier for you to put things away and see them, and therefore more likely you're going to stick to it then.
So tell us about some of the people you've met, obviously not personal names or, you know, situations, but is there something common in every person that you come to help?
There's a sense of time. Time is a big issue. You know, we're all so, so busy in our lives these days. There's so many pressures from the outside world to do this, do that. We've pressures from our jobs, from our families, from everything. So yeah, a lot of people are time poor. They may have a desire to do this, but they don't have the time to do it. Or they may even have the desire to do it, but they don't know where to start as well. They don't know a good process to do. They don't kind of, they feel that overwhelmed. They kind of feel that stress where they're just like, oh no, where do I start? If I start, you know, I don't know where to finish. So yeah, those kind of are the two main people. Like, I work with a lot of busy professionals, but I also work with a lot of busy mums as well. People who just, you know, maybe have a couple of kids and they're just like, I'd love to do this, but I just don't have the time to do it, or my life doesn't lend itself to do it. And I've also worked with people who are moving home as well and people who are downsizing. And so they need just help because, you know, they're in a very specific time frame to get something done. So helping them to declutter their home prior to them moving to their new premises and then helping them on the other side unpack everything and put it away in the space of a couple of days, just, you know, to set them straight for the, you know, the ground running from then on in.
And it does get to a point, like you start off with loads of motivation and enthusiasm. I did my daughter's bedroom at the last weekend, and you start off great, then it reaches a stage where there's just stuff everywhere and you like want to just give up. But then slowly but surely you start to make headway, and even now for the last week walking into that room, I can feel a sense of calm. It is worth doing, but is there that messy middle bit for everybody?
There is, to a certain degree. Like, you can help yourself. You know, the first thing you need to do really is find out what is working in that space, that room, and what isn't working. And I would even write that down first. So, you know, you're setting your goals, what you want to happen from this decluttering process. And yes, you know, initially it can get a little bit messy. It can get a little bit kind of hayward where you're like, things are just everywhere. But by following a process of kind of taking everything out of that space and categorizing it, that's really good. Because you find then you have 10 of these, 15 of them, 20 of them. And, you know, you don't need that many amount of things. So yeah, take everything out, create that little bit of a mess initially, but then you categorize everything and then you decide, right, now I'm going to do a little bit of a cull, a little bit of declutter. You edit back the things that you have that you don't need anymore, or that you have multiples of. And, you know, you can give them away to family, friends. You can give them to a charity shop as well. You know, there's so many other people out there who might take, you know, and want those things as well. And then you're simplifying your life a little bit there and you're reducing the amount of things that are in that room. And then you decide, right, where am I going to put things? You know, where I want to hang my dresses. Am I going to put them over here? Am I going to put something like that in a drawer? You know, you make those decisions as you're going along. And you can bring in extra kind of storage project that might help, like bins and baskets and things like that. But sometimes you don't need to. You know, you've actually done a big clutter there. So you don't actually sometimes need to buy anything extra. You might have storage at home that you can reuse as well. And just taking the time, you know, give yourself the time. don't try and rush it too much, because then you're under stress, you're under pressure, and you're not enjoying the process. And it should be a really enjoyable process to get that calm, to get that sense of feeling of balance and clarity, you know, for that space.
I think it's a good move to have somebody like you come in and help, because not only does it have the accountability of an appointment and somebody calling, but, you know, you get help with it. What would you say to people who think, oh God, no, I couldn't let someone like Jenny in, they would be judging my mess and making me part with things that I'm not ready to part with?
Yeah, no, there's no judgment. Like, I've been there myself. I understand the overwhelm. I understand sometimes you might feel embarrassed. You know, you might feel that someone is going to look at you and go, good God, how did this happen? It's not like that. I've been there myself. I completely understand. You know, I am a professional organizer, but I left my house this morning and I tell you, it didn't look that organized. So I completely understand. And I don't. I have a real clear mindset of what I want to happen for you. And there's no judgment there. You know, we work together. I should be acting like your best friend. You know, yes, I will hold you a little bit accountable. And yes, I might say, do you really need that? Do you really love that? Does it make sense for you to have five of them in that drawer? You know, there will be a few questions asked, but I'm only there to help you make those hard decisions, especially if something may be sentimental or something that you've paid a lot of money for. You know, that cost, that money is gone. So from now on in, it's just helping you make really good decisions that are going to suit you, your family, your lifestyle, and get you that sense of calm and clarity and, you know, no stress, no overwhelm in your house anymore.
Well, who doesn't want calm and clarity in 2025? If you want to find out more about Jenny's work, you can go to agoodmomentcompany.ie. Why did you call it A Good Moment?
Because it's all about that. It's about getting those good moments back in your life. It's about saving time. It's about saving space. We shouldn't be spending our time reorganizing every single day all the time. We should be having good moments, more good moments in our life. And so, yeah, that's what inspired me to call it that name.
Well, Jenny Douglas from A Good Moment Company, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Claire.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Shauna Clare is a professional opera singer. She was just beginning to start out on her career when she was struck with an illness which left her unable to walk. She joins me in studio now. Shauna, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
And you sent me an email looking to share your story, and it is one of resilience and overcoming. Do you have to get to a certain point in your journey before you feel willing to share it?
I think so. It's something, I suppose I'm about 3 years into recovery now, and it's only now that I really feel ready to start talking about it, because I think it is quite traumatic when you go through something so life altering. And even when you recover, there's this huge, this huge feeling of overwhelm, of just, did this actually happen to me? Have I made it all up? Am I recovered? Is it going to happen again? So I think it's taken me until this point to actually feel comfortable that, okay, I am recovered. This is not going to come and smack me in the face again. And, you know, here I am ready to talk about it.
Well, tell us a little bit about your condition then, CRPS. It's not something I'd heard of before.
Yeah, so CRPS stands for Complex Regional Pain Syndrome. And it's a super, super rare pain condition. It took me about 6 months to actually get a diagnosis. Now, this was in the middle of COVID as well, so it was all up in the air at one point. But CRPS is Complex Regional Pain Syndrome, and it's essentially a pain condition that we don't know a lot about. We don't have a cure for it necessarily, and there's no real set treatment plan either. It attacks your nervous system, and it causes this excruciating nerve pain, which for me manifested in both of my feet. Usually it affects one side of the body and not the other, but I was just unlucky enough, I suppose, to get it in both. There's not a lot known about it, but from what I was told, I was probably one of the worst cases definitely in Ireland, possibly in Europe. So it was, it was very traumatic.
And where were you at in life when the symptoms
started to happen?
Yeah, so like I was just finishing up my studies at the Royal Irish Academy of Music. I was studying with my singing teacher at the time, Ronnie, Dr. Veronica Dunn. She unfortunately passed away in COVID, but she was just an absolute legend. And we were really at the point where we were pushing my career forwards, ready to kind of, I suppose, step into the spotlight metaphorically. So I had just finished up doing Fidelio with Lyric Opera Ireland, and I started to get these really like non-concerning slight pains in the soles of my feet. And I was just thinking, bit strange. Like, is this just tiredness? Is it, you know, the way like if you have a long day, people say, oh, my feet are killing me, like the bottom of my feet are burning. And I was like, maybe this is just that. But it just gradually got worse and worse. And then like that COVID happened, there was a total lockdown of the entire state. So there was nowhere to actually get help for it. So it really just got worse and worse and worse.
Plus in lockdown, you weren't having these busy days on your feet. So you're thinking, why is the pain still here?
Exactly. I remember for about a month on end, I was just lying with my feet up, wrapped in cold, wet towels, just trying to keep this burning pain away. And I was there for about a month straight. And because, like, I think as everybody, all the days in lockdown kind of blended into one another. And it wasn't until I said, God, this has been about 4 to 5 weeks now of me lying here. That's not normal. So, you know, I went to A&E. I did, like, there was, you know, there was no GPs. There was no online doctors at this point. There was absolutely nothing. So when I went to A&E, I was told, well, you know, better that you can't walk than you have COVID. And I was kind of thinking, but this is also a problem, you know? And I think the country was so overwhelmed with COVID, they just didn't have the resources to deal with anything else, which unfortunately led to my situation getting worse.
And it got really bad. I mean, you were wheelchair bound at one stage, and that must have been very tough for a very young, healthy person.
Yeah, that was the hardest part, I think, because, you know, I ended up getting treated by a pain specialist. Whatever spinal intervention they did just did not agree with me for some reason. I completely went the other way and everything got much worse. My feet swelled up. I was like literally walking around on two melons, kind of. I laugh about it now, but it really was quite horrific. And it got to the point where my skin started to degrade. Like I'm still, to this day, from the ankle down, covered in third degree burns because my skin just completely started to kind of eat itself from the inside out. Like, it sounds like something out of a horror film, but this was what was happening to me. And as you say, like, I'd been very active before that. You know, I used to climb mountains. I was a sea swimmer. I was very, very active. I used to dance opera. I don't know, people don't really seem to think, but it's a very active, energetic career. Like, you're kind of constantly on the move. And all of a sudden, all of that was taken away from me. And it just kept degrading and degrading and degrading to the point that I was in a wheelchair for the best part of 2 years.
How did you keep yourself together mentally at that point?
Gosh, it's a good question, because I don't think I did. I think, I know I completely relied on my parents. They were absolutely phenomenal this entire journey. I think I had mentally checked out at this point, because this was the worst pain I had ever experienced in my life. Like, CRPS is commonly nicknamed the suicide disease, because there's no cure and the pain is so excruciating that a lot of people unfortunately turn to that potential solution as a way out. So for me, I think I had mentally checked out, and I was so nearly high on all these medications that I was given. Like, I was on very strong gabapentin and I was on Oxycontin. I didn't know where I was half the time. So I really strongly believe the only reason that I'm actually here today is probably my mum. And I don't really want to get too emotional, but she was phenomenal. Like, she just did not give up. She kept pushing and pushing doctors for answers. And she ended up knowing this physiotherapist who I'm convinced is like the seventh son of a seventh son, because he had all these natural remedies that ended up, I suppose, like, for lack of a better word, curing me and bringing me to where I am now. But yeah, it really was her that gathered the team and brought everybody together.
Because you have just breezed into this studio.
Yeah.
You know, there's no wheelchair. You yeah. look fit, healthy and well.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's been a journey in itself.
Absolutely.
But you are well now.
I'm mostly well, absolutely. I mean, I still, I would call it now a chronic condition. I don't really know what to call it because there's not enough research done on it. I'm not in active CRPS, which would be, you know, the excruciating pain, the swelling, all of that. But I still deal with pain on a day-to-day basis. So my, like, I'm constantly in bodily pain. I kind of describe it as almost like chronic fatigue syndrome. Like, I need to rest a lot more than probably other people would. I have osteoporosis from it. So I have to take care of that. But I suppose on the outside and presenting to the world, I'm a fit, healthy, young person. And it's a lot better than I suppose it ever would have been, considering the prognosis I was given.
And that's a lot to get your head around, isn't it? Because
Absolutely.
We sort of see an illness as there's a start, there's a middle and an end. There's a
Absolutely.
Diagnosis, a treatment plan, a recovery. And mm-hmm. you look back on that chapter in your life. And although you do seem to have moved into a different chapter, to know that CRPS is going to be in your life
yeah.
forever
yeah.
is very hard to get your head around.
Absolutely, it really is. And like every time that I would have like that, just sore feet at the end of a day, I would kind of think, oh God, is this happening again? Is this it? And it really takes a lot of mental strength to turn around and say, no, here I am. I'm well now. But it does come with a lot of constant monitoring. I get physiotherapy once a month. I do a lot of holistic treatments, like I'd get lymphatic drainage done. I do reflexology. I practice a lot of self-care just to try and keep on top of my mental health as well as my physical health. Because I think once you've been to that very, very dark place, it's very hard to get your mindset back to, like, quote unquote, normal living.
And was there a moment, I mean, I asked you at the start, you know, do you get to a point before you're ready to share your story? But was there a moment where you thought, I'm ready to get back to the Shauna Clare that I know? I want to get back singing. I want to yeah. get back socialising. Do you remember that turning point?
Oh my gosh, yeah, I really do. And it was when I started to, my physio, like, he was just incredible. His name's Simon Green. But he started to tell me, right, you need to get off this medication because it is completely, you're asleep all day, every day. Like, I, honest to God, there's about 4 months of my life that I have no memory of from just how much medication I was on. And he said, this has to, you're never going to get back to normal if you don't know your own name, you know? So we started reducing and reducing on these horrible, horrible Oxycontin medications. And I was gradually waking up and becoming more and more like myself. And I think I was only out of the wheelchair about 3 months when I said, right, I want to start back on this. And like that, it's taken 3 years to get to this point now where I actually feel, okay, I'm ready to step back into my opera career and I'm ready to start living again, quote unquote, like a normal person. Like, I hate the word normal, but I suppose it's a benchmark for what I was before. I'd say I'm back to about 50% of that. So now I feel ready to start moving forward, but it definitely has taken 3 years of voice training, of exercise, of just kind of learning to live and do normal things and be independent again.
And mind yourself at the centre of that.
Absolutely.
And be very self-aware.
Absolutely. The self-awareness is so overlooked like that as well, because I think people would often get twinges and pains in their body and just go, ah, that's just wear and tear, it's whatever. But you don't really know what the underlying cause of it is and where it could possibly lead to.
And I'm conscious in the conversation as well that you've mentioned the word holistic a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I think people often think that that means it's an either or situation.
Yeah.
But holistic means taking it all. So
absolutely.
Medical professionals, complementary, finding out what works for you. It's that rounded approach to
yes.
our health that ultimately is what has you where you are.
Absolutely. I mean, I have so many medical consultants at this point that you do need to balance it out in a way as well. Like, especially when you're on an awful lot of medication, like I was at that point, you need to kind of figure out a way that your body can also adapt to not necessarily needing that all the time as well.
Yeah, depending on the condition, but I get what you're
Absolutely.
Saying. If you're just taking very heavy duty painkillers to
yes.
mask the pain, at one point you're going to have to try and look at other ways perhaps to
Absolutely.
Reduce the pain. And as you say, you were finding it difficult to function
Absolutely.
On the level of strength of the painkillers. So
oh, absolutely.
That needed to be looked at.
Absolutely. And I think people are so quick to hand out painkillers as well. And I suppose, like, I was on the highest dosage, you know, of OxyContin as like a 23-year-old, young, healthy, fit person, and no other treatment option was offered to me other than just take these meds, keep increasing. I was losing weight at the point. I was severely underweight and I was on these really heavy-duty pain medication. I hadn't a clue where I was half the time. And I think, like, with all the awareness coming out around, I suppose, abuses of opioid medication as well, it is important to kind of address there are other ways to manage pain, of course, depending on your condition and what you can handle yourself. Because believe you me, at the time when I was experiencing this pain, I was just saying, give me everything. All I want is anything that will get rid of this pain.
Yes. And obviously coming off any medication needs to be done with the support of a medical professional.
Absolutely.
So what of the singing then? Because that's obviously a great part of your wellness,
yeah.
Something that you love to do and gives you great joy in life.
Yeah.
Are you going to be taking to the stage again anytime soon?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm currently on the professional mentorship course at the Royal Irish Academy of Music. And I have to say, they have just been incredible in supporting my recovery. My own teacher, Sylvia O'Regan, has been just like a second mother to me in this whole recovery journey. She's been really, really helpful in terms of using my body again in a healthy way. And then the whole team at the Academy has been incredible in supporting this journey. I mean, it's not a career that you would immediately think is very open to somebody with a chronic illness, because it is so active and, you know, you're constantly running around, quick changes on and off stage. It's very physical. It's very strenuous. Even just the act of singing opera itself is this enormous physical feat. So getting back to that stage, like, it has taken me the best part of 3 years. So it's just been phenomenal to be able to do it again. But I really do think that aided in my recovery as well, was being able to sing and being able to express myself and having something, most importantly, to strive for. Because I think if you don't have something that you love, that you're striving for, you have no motivation to really move yourself forward.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's your passion and something you were aiming
Absolutely.
To return to.
Yeah.
Well, you have a fire in your eyes and a great strength. I've
Thank
no
you.
Doubt you will continue to soar. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
Much for coming on. Where can people find you?
So people can find me over on social media. I'm quite active on Instagram and on TikTok. I'm at Shauna Clare Official, Clare with an I. And I share a lot of my journey there. Thank
Shauna
you.
Clare, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much, Claire. It's been an absolute honour to be here and I really appreciate the opportunity to tell the story.
I'm wishing you every success in the future.
Thank you so much.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Tara Rafter is CEO and founder of The Navigation Coach. Indeed, that is who she is. An award-winning life coach and master NLP practitioner working with people who feel lost, overwhelmed or at a crossroads and who want to embark on a voyage of self-discovery which will give them clarity to stop wasting time and energy and start living. Well, sounds like a great person for us to call in at the start of a new year. Tara, you are very, very welcome.
Thank you. It's so lovely to be here.
How do you feel about the start of a new year and resolutions and all that jazz?
Yeah, it's such a big kind of topic, isn't it? Everyone is like, new year, new me. And, you know, sometimes it can feel like pressure and then sometimes it can feel like an opportunity. I think if we think about like the behavioural science world, they are literally known as temporal landmarks. So the beginning of a week, the beginning of a month, the beginning of a year. Humans respond well to stuff like that. So it can be a really big opportunity for you to make change. But I feel like it has to come from the right place.
Because there is a positive energy with something new, even like turning over to a new page or like at school, a new copybook. There's something, the new pencil case, before everything gets a little bit grubby.
Yeah.
There's something nice about that.
Oh, I used to love that feeling.
Yeah.
New copy. Yeah, definitely. I think as well, humans feel quite motivated when they see the potential for change. You know, it kind of feels like you close a chapter and you're about to, you know, start something that's brand new in your life. And we respond really well to blank canvases. We respond well to new chapters and potential.
So that said, I mean, I said at the opening of the show, I'm very much allergic to people now starting the new year. That's tough enough already. We're going to start taking down the Christmas decorations soon. You know, the parties are few and far between. The cupboard is bare. The bank balance is looking a little bit iffy. The last thing we need is to start picking up a stick and beating ourselves over the back for what we're not doing right and getting really strict with ourselves, I feel. Mm. What's your advice for people setting themselves up for the new year?
Yeah, I agree. I think people, you know, we can be our own worst critics so often, and there can be a lot of pressure potentially depending on what like resources you're looking at or what type of humans you're surrounding yourself with. I think it has to come from a good place, and I think it has to come from a place of compassion and empathy, and we have to sit with ourselves and go, what chapter of my life am I in right now? You know, what feels like an alignment, what feels like it will nourish and nurture this moment of my life that I'm in. And I think when you come at it from a place of love as opposed to like a place of fear or scarcity, we're much more inclined to engage. The brain all the time is moving you away from what it perceives as pain toward what it perceives as pleasure. And if you think about it from that regard, humans are much more likely to follow or pursue a goal when it's, you know, aimed at something that's going to be positive in their lives as opposed to avoidant. So thinking about the way you structure it is really helpful as well.
So I said in the introduction that you work with a lot of people who come to you at a crossroads who might feel lost and overwhelmed. So there might be people listening, I'm sure there are, that feel that way now. And what is your advice?
Yeah, I think lost is always a signal within the body. You know, it's like the body gives us a signal of hungry when we need to eat food. And I feel like when we feel the feeling of lost, it's information. I've been really lucky over the last 7 years of my training, and especially in the last year I trained with Dr. Gabor Mate and his team, and he would talk about the fact that our bodies are speaking to us all the time. Lost is information. And instead of dwelling in the feeling, if you can get curious about it and see what next steps would feel like a remedy, you know, whether it's to have a conversation with somebody or to talk to a coach or to talk to a really good friend, if you can treat it from the perspective of empathy, compassion and curiosity, it will change the lens that you see it through. Overwhelm, if you think about that one, which, listen, you know, I don't know a human that hasn't experienced that. The signal or the message in the body from overwhelm is whatever you're presenting to me feels like it's too big and I can't do it. So instantly that's information, if we get curious about it, that the brain or the subconscious needs you to chunk it down. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So it's kind of sitting with it and going, if I was to look at this from a different perspective or from a different angle, is there a way that I can make it smaller so that it feels more manageable? Sometimes it's a case of, you know, adding things like timelines, looking at what the process is as opposed to the destination, seeing what supports you could bring in alongside it that would make it easier, asking yourself if you have all the resources, looking at the type of language that you're framing it around. So the brain responds really well to positive, present tense, exciting language. You know, if you're telling yourself that something you're about to embark on from an overwhelmed perspective is going to be hell and a nightmare and you're going to die, your brain has one job and it's keep you alive. It's listening to that language, and all it has to go on are the words you give it and the pictures that come up off the back of that. So tell yourself you're excited and you're grateful and you can't wait and it thrills you and it enthralls you and you're supported and you're organized and you're resourced, and the feeling in the body will be different.
And not only are you well qualified and have loads of experience working with people, you've walked this road yourself, haven't you? You've turned your life around one bite of the elephant at a time.
Yeah, the poor elephant. Yeah, I have. I was in the retail world for 19 years before I stepped into this world. And I embarked on the change and I did the piece, you know, of take the leap that so many people are afraid to do. And I think one of the biggest catalysts for change in my life was when I had my son. And I was, you know, had a 10 ton of trauma, like so many people in my own background as a child. And I feel like, you know, we kind of are motivated away from pleasure and kind of, you know, are toward pleasure and away from pain. And for me, I just worked and worked and worked. I went into retail really, really young and I went from the bottom to the top of the ladder. And that world taught me a lot. And I feel like I got to a point when I had my son where my value system completely shifted in the world. And I think it's a really good point for anybody listening. Check in with yourself in terms of what your values are in your life right now, today, you know, in January of 2025. What's happening in your life? What's important to you? What's relevant? Where do you need to begin to spend your time, your money and your energy? And when I did that reevaluation after I had my son, my role as a mother was probably something that stood out as the loudest. You know, I wanted to be there in the morning to have the chat over the Rice Krispies and drop him to school. And I wanted to be there in the evening to put on the cartoons and the fire and have the dinner and the chat. And, you know, that anchor piece that we all hold on to on those rainy October days. And when I was faced with that in terms of knowing I needed to make a change, I began to follow a feeling. I began to explore what felt right as opposed to searching for a job title. I began to think, what, you know, how would I like to feel every morning when I woke up? What would I like my perfect day to look like? What kind of humans would I like to have around me? I just started to get really curious about the process, but I followed a feeling to make the change.
And I think people will be surprised about that because there's a lot of mixed messaging, isn't there, around achievement. So people are thinking at the start of this year, they need to set a goal for their body, a goal for their career. They'll be like, oh, what? The goal can be to sit and eat Rice Krispies with my kid or my partner or, you know, is that enough of a goal for 2025? And that's even more of a goal than any of the others because the others don't matter if you don't have what's in your heart.
I think peace is the new success. You know, I think that that contentment, that feeling of climbing into bed at night and putting your head on the pillow and being able to just peacefully fall asleep, knowing that all of your value systems are aligned, that you're spending your time, your money and your energy in the right places and that you're doing it all from a place of love as opposed to a place of fear. It's a very happy way to live. And I think humans, I don't know, is it COVID or the world, but I think there's an awakening beginning to happen and people are beginning to reassess and realign and they're much more anchored and grounded into what makes them happy.
And I suppose there's going to be times where you get into bed. It doesn't mean that you've ticked all the boxes and got everything right, but you're like, I'm doing my best. And you've had that moment of self-reflection. You know what your navigation system is. You know what your GPS is. So you might have taken a wrong turn, but you know, that's okay. You know where you're going.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, again, back to the values piece. I think when we live aligned to our values, we live a peaceful, peaceful life. And that navigation system inside us, you know, humans forget there's neurological pathways in our brain, in our heart and in our gut. And we do make decisions from three places. You know that feeling if you've ever met someone and you went, oh my God, I knew in my gut your man was a dose and I gave him a chance. Or I knew in my heart that that was the right thing to do. That's a very real knowing that we have. And I think the world has got really noisy. We are more disconnected than we've ever been as a result of, you know, busyness and life and commitments and responsibilities and chasing the dream and social media. I think the more time we spend reconnecting in with ourselves, coming home into ourselves, spending time in nature, spending time chatting around the fire like we used to with people that we love, you know, that's where that reconnection piece happens. And when humans are grounded and centered, they are much more content in themselves. And that navigation piece becomes much more organic and a lot less forced.
So how do you know when you're making decisions or choices, maybe with your values or whatever it is, what's coming from the real you and what's coming from the ego? How do you make sense of that?
The ego will always do, you know, I hear people should all over their lives. I should do this and I should do that and I should feel this and I should feel that. I think from a language cue perspective, it's very interesting that anytime you should all over your life, you should take a second and go, is this me or is this the ego? That peaceful, authentic you, the tone of voice, even when I work with clients, they'll often say in terms of their internal dialogue, it's different. Sometimes the ego will be loud. It'll speak really fast. It'll populate their brain with lots of different thoughts and there'll be 10,000 tabs open and music coming from somewhere. But the authentic self will be a very still, quiet, solid voice. It doesn't usually say a whole pile, actually, when I have conversations with clients. It's usually, yes or no, this is right or wrong, this feels good or bad. And it comes from a place of knowing, deep, deep knowing within ourselves.
I know that was something that used to blow my mind over and over again when I did my health coach training.
Yes.
And the thing that was repeated over and over is, because so many of us were like, how are we really supposed to coach people? I mean, I don't know. I don't have it all figured out either.
I still feel like that,
you know,
7 years in.
But they'd say, everybody knows deep down what it is that they want. They just need the time and the accountability and a little nudge to find it. So it's not like you're giving them answers. You're just giving them space. You're holding space.
Yeah.
So deep down, we all know what we want for 2025. It's whether or not we'll be able to make it happen or allow ourselves to make it happen or realise that it is enough to just want very simple, small things. I'm all for easing ourselves in gently into the year. One of the biggest things that jumped out to me over the last few years was the Celtic calendar and how our ancestors wouldn't really do anything. This is the dreaming time.
Yeah.
And then you don't really start any planning till February. So I've gone back to the Celtic calendar.
You have a sister here. Like, we're supposed to be hibernating now.
Yes.
We're supposed to be on the sofa with the, I was going to say tin of roses, that day is gone.
No, that's gone. That's empty.
So
there's only a few crap ones left.
Yeah. But we're supposed to be hibernating. That's exactly where we're supposed to be. And I think if you can enter the new year with a kind of a compassion for yourself and a holding of yourself and a reflection of the fact that we are part of nature, we are part of that cyclical aspect, then, you know, reflect and take time to think about what 2024 looked like. Ask yourself what went well. We're more critical of ourselves than anyone's. You know, we're down on ourselves like a ton of bricks. Ask yourself where you could have made change, what could have made a difference, if you could wave a magic wand, you know, all of those lovely questions that open up our potentials. And then tiptoe forward into 2025. And when February comes, you're ready. And even in February, you just start sowing your seeds. You know, there's 12 months there with potential for change.
What about human capacity then? Talk to us a little bit about that. That's something that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, because I think it's important. I think sometimes we set all the goals and then we launch ourselves into the world sideways, wondering why it doesn't work. And I often think about it from a very simple perspective. Humans are like, you know, if you can imagine the four legs of a chair, like we sit on a physical aspect, a psychological aspect, an emotional aspect, and a spiritual aspect. And if you were to take any one of the legs away from the chair gets really wobbly. The physical aspect is something that needs to be maintained when it comes to capacity. We have to look at how we're fueling our bodies. We're all talking about the gut-brain axis. We have to look at hydration. It's huge. You know, over 60% of our body is made up of water. We have to think about our sleep, the quality of your sleep, the quantity of your sleep. It's really important to start thinking about, you know, the amount of time you're going to spend in nature. I think humans have completely overlooked it. It's coming back a little bit. There's people beginning to hike up the side of mountains again, which is great. Connection is a massive part of how we move through the world. We came into the world in tribes. You know, we survive, but we also thrive when we're together. So looking at that physical aspect, that physical leg of the chair is really important. From a psychological aspect, look at your thoughts. You know, the latest study in 2020, we have 6,000 thoughts a day. 90% of them are repeated. What is the quality of your thoughts? What kind of language are you using when you're thinking your thoughts? Because that's all your brain has to go on. What kind of, you know, Groundhog Day reel is spinning in there the whole time? So from a psychological aspect, really beginning to look at, you know, the layers that are contained within a person on a conscious and a subconscious level. We have been conditioned since before we came into the world. What kind of belief systems do you have about yourself? Where do they come from? Are they true? If you need to do something in relation to unraveling or untangling some of that, is it something that needs to be supported? And then the emotional leg of the chair, I often think about wounding. You know, there's no human that I've met that hasn't felt pain. No one has got through life, you know, unscathed, sadly. And an emotional wound is exactly the same as a physical one. You know, if you fell and cut your knee, you would have a look at it and maybe wash it and put a bit of cream on it and a plaster. You might give yourself a lolly depending on how you were feeling. And you would check on it again the next day. And you would check on that wound to make sure that it was clean, to avoid physical infection. And emotional wounds are exactly the same way. We have to mind them in the same way. We have to put cream on them and clean them and check on them. And if we need to go to the doctor, we have to do that. I think that aspect of the human needs to be minded. And then the spiritual one, listen, you do you. But I think it's knowing that the capacity has to be nourished and nurtured in order for anyone to move forward, you know, it, with whatever version of success looks like for them. We need to have fuel in the tank to do it because it's a lot. It's a lot for a human to experience and navigate change. your brain is in there running patterns all the time. It hates to think and it hates to install new patterns. So you have to remember you're beginning to install new neurological pathways. And for that to happen from a neuroplasticity perspective, even in the brain, you need energy to do it.
Yeah, you need those four legs of the stool. It's a really good analogy.
Yeah.
What about you then for 2025? I mean, you're tiptoeing in hibernation now, but do you set goals for yourself?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of them are very centered around my values. So, you know, I think it's a really good exercise to do almost twice a year to sit down and look at what's really important to you. I often do, you know, those weird days between Christmas and New Year when you haven't a clue what day it is. I sit down then and I will think, right, how am I doing? What's going well? What's important to me? What would feel like a win? And then what would the process be in order to get there? And I would do it again kind of around June or July. For next year, I feel like this kind of stuff is totally mind blowing. Like, I cannot believe that I'm sitting here with you, which was one of my stuff. You know, when I think about my goals for last year, it was about stepping more into the public kind of eye and reaching a little bit further. So organically and by the grace of God, it's beginning to happen. So I'd love to do a bit more of that. Keep training and keep doing all my one-to-one work, which I absolutely adore. And the biggest part of all of it is always my role as a mother. So making sure that I'm as present as I can be, doing my best, even though my best changes some days from the morning to the evening, but that I'm connected to him and that I'm attuned and that he knows that I'm there.
Oh, I love it. Well, on my list is to hang out with you more in 2025.
I love it.
You are the energy that we all need. Oh. Tara Rafter, you are welcome on this show anytime.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about Tara's work, you can go to thenavigationcoach.com. You'll have to come back and check in, see how we're all doing. Thank you so much for coming on.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So look, set your course for a gentle start into the new year. A reminder, my course starts tomorrow and then I will stop talking about it. It is a self-care start, 10 minutes a day for 10 days, focusing on you and your self-care. And there is nothing strict and no diets involved. Go to nourishyourself.ie or my Instagram at Claire McKenna Presents. That is it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aaron Jordan, to Aidan McKelvey and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.